The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Well, welcome to a Tuesday. I can't believe it's only Tuesday because it feels like much later in the week. The Queen is still dead and the death tour continues. This is a weird tradition they have, you know. Look, I'm kind of weirded out by the fact that so many people die and it's like a week or two or more later that they're finally buried. That's one thing the Jews do right. You die and they put you in the ground or whatever your final destination is. And they do it fast, like the next day. This tour, the dead body thing, just gives me the creeps. I'm sorry she's dead, but, you know, 96, she had a good life. On to the next thing, right? So anyway, that's all you'll hear about the Queen today, unless Digby wants to, you know, chime in about anything, because I've about had it. I'm just really done. What else is going on? Lindsey Graham. I got to start today by talking about Lindsey Graham because, well, you know, Lindsey's nuts and a hypocrite. After all, we've known about Lindsey's hypocrisy for a long time, haven't we? Here, let me give you just an example of the hypocrisy of Lindsey Graham. So back, you know, I guess it was like 2016. Oh, now I can't even read what's on those things. All right. This is Lindsey Graham talking about Donald Trump, but from a few years ago.
I think he's a kook. I think he's crazy. Yeah. I think he's unfit for office.
I don't believe he's a Republican. His policies are really bad for the country.
He's a jackass. And you know how you make America great again? Tell Donald Trump to go to hell.
Yeah, see, that works. And sometimes he's even a little more to the point.
Trump is a fucking idiot.
See, I get that. So here's the deal. And maybe someone can help me out with this because I'm truly grasping here. So there's been a trend. Here's the timeline. Supreme Court, a couple of months ago, ruled on Dobbs and overturned Roe v. Wade. And the backlash has been huge and immediate. I mean, we saw Kansas come out and women say, hell no, you don't. And it's been like that around the country. Women are registering to vote in record numbers. I mean, and they're registering as Democrats. I'm thrilled. Works for me. And hopefully, you know, the Democrats can retain control and they can codify our right, women's rights to control our bodies. But, you know, in the recent weeks, we have seen Republicans, Republican candidates for office, regardless of where they're running, Republican candidates running and basically scrubbing their websites of anything having to do with their primary stance on abortion. We see it across the board. What's his name? Blake Masters or whatever the guy's name is in Arizona. Any reference to his call for a complete ban on abortions, gone. And that's happening over and over again. In fact, Politics Girl even did a bit about it. Listen to what she has to say.
Lawmakers are trying to walk back their positions on abortion now that they're noticing it's an absolutely losing issue with the majority of the American public. But we see you. We heard you. Yeah. You've already dined out and crowed and celebrated. No abortions, no exceptions, not even in the case of rape or incest or the life of the mother. We are pro-life, so go die.
Yeah.
You've already told us in the media and in legislation and in court cases that there will be no life-saving care for women with ectopic pregnancies, incomplete miscarriages, or people with untreated terminal diseases. You can change your website, but we already know what value you place on our lives. You don't see us as people. You see us as property, as broodmares, as sacred vessels, your victims and handmaids. Sometimes I'm not even sure if you see us at all. You right? seem to think we belong to you, that you can just make laws that control us and we'll allow it, that we're livestock who should be taking care of the family and obeying the patriarchy and pumping out that domestic supply of infants. You're even talking about getting rid of contraception so we can't even stop ourselves from getting pregnant, because submission seems to be preferable to sharing the world with us. None of this has to do with life. It has to do with power. One party wants to go back to a time when men were on top, no matter their skill or value. Oy. When they got the best jobs and the best room and the best piece of cake, where women knew their place and minorities knew to stay out of the way. They don't want us as part of their society. They want us to serve their society. Well, I hate to break it to you, but we aren't interested. Our ancestors didn't fight this hard for us to go back under your boot. The majority of us are not interested in being forced back into a box by a minority group of small-minded, unevolved, self-serving zealots who bought or manipulated every aspect of our country to force their preferred way of life onto the rest of us. At the end of the day, even fascism requires compliance, and I can promise you there is a hell of a lot of us with no plans to comply. So you can walk back those positions all you want. We see you, and we will be voting accordingly.
Hell yeah. That is the politics girl. Oh, what you didn't see was at the end, she gave the two middle finger salute. She rocks. But she called out the hypocrisy exactly correctly. Why? Because this morning, Lindsey Graham, that bastion of integrity, introduced legislation that would nationally outlaw abortion after 15 weeks. I couldn't make this up if I tried, because it makes no sense. Here's Miss Lindsey. Listen to this. This is not what I meant to play, but okay.
I have regular appointments. I did everything right, and at 16 weeks, we found out that our son would likely not live. When he was born, he lived for 8 days.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? I'm actually going to, in the interest of time, I'm going to cut that one off. Maybe I'll play it later. But Lindsey Graham totally called out on his hypocrisy, because he believes that, I'm looking for the right clip here. I think this might be it. He is calling for a complete and total ban on all abortions from the 15-week mark on. All right, let's try this again.
You stated that the repeal of Roe v. Wade would mean that every state will decide if abortion is legal and on what terms. And you said that that is the most constitutionally sound way of dealing with the issue. And here you are introducing a nationwide 15-week ban. Yeah. I'm wondering how you square those two statements.
Pretty easy. After they introduced the bill to define who they are, I thought it'd be nice to introduce a bill to define who we are. So,
okay, and again, that was the wrong one. How about this? Here we go. Here's the audio. No, that's not it either. Okay, I guess I don't have it. Lovely. Lindsey Graham, it basically, is this it? Man, I hate when I do this. I was so, right on top of it, and I had the clip ready to go. And now I can't find it. So I'll tell you what we'll do. Let me just check one more place, because maybe I have the audio. That's him unfit for office. Here. Well, there is this. This is not what I was looking for, but Lindsey Graham made a promise. You ready?
I look forward to the debate. I look forward to the vote. If we take back the House and the Senate, I can assure you we'll have a vote on our bill. If the Democrats are in charge, I don't know if we'll ever have a vote on our bill. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over.
Lovely. So he's promising that we will outlaw abortion. We'll have a vote on it as long as you elect us. If you don't, if you elect the Democrats, well, you know, they probably won't bring it up for a vote. I can't imagine a reason that any woman would vote for this guy. I just really can't. Oh, let's see. Hold on. Let me try one more thing. Let's try this clip.
Yes, ma'am. Would you be robbing that choice from
nope, that's the same one. All right. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. Rather than me keeping on looking for the right clip, we're going to bring in Digby. And you know what we have to do to bring in Digby, don't you? We have to do this.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
You find Heather Digby Parton at digbysblog.net and, of course, at salon.com as well. Hey, Digby, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, glad to be here.
So Lindsay, can you figure out why he's doing this?
I do know why he's I can tell you exactly why he's doing this.
Okay.
They are afraid at this point of, you know, all their hardcore Trumper, you know, freak show candidates are in a position now where they're kind of trying to back off because after they saw what happened in Kansas and are reading the polls that this abortion ban is hugely unpopular and their personal stances on it during the primaries are way, way, way out of step with their constituents. So they see all that. So they're trying to figure out a way to back off. And some of them are doing it, like down in Arizona, guys, Blake Masters,
right,
who called abortion genocide, is now saying, well, he said, you know, he's for a 15-week ban. So, you know, you can see, you know, that there, some of them are being much more crude about doing it than others, but that's what's happening. So notice, you did a great rundown of Graham's, you know, reprehensible hypocrisy on this.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's McConnell, who came out right after that and said, well, most of my conference doesn't really agree with that, and we're not going to bring it to a vote. They're trying to have it both ways. So you've got McConnell there doing one thing. You've got Lindsey Graham doing a ban. They're trying to keep their people on board at the same time as they're trying to say, you know, their own fanatics on board at the same time that they're trying to say that, well, you know, look, we're not crazy. We're not going to do a national ban. We're going to leave it up to the states. In other words, they're throwing out all these different things in the hopes that individual candidates and individual Republican voters who are uncomfortable with all this can choose which direction they want to go. So the hard right people, they can go along with, you know, they say, oh, we want a national ban and, you know, we're for we want everyone, you know, a total ban, including, you know, the life of the mother. You've got the middle of the road people now who are the 15-week ban. Then you've got the states' rights people who are saying, well, each state can do it their own way. And they can then pick and choose among those things. It's about the best they can do under these circumstances. I don't think it will work. I mean, it's very easy to sort of, it's sort of an old-fashioned concept where you say, well, all politics is local and everybody's going to do their own thing and there is no national. When it comes to abortion, this is a national issue.
Right.
And this is basically something, they can't run from it no matter how hard. This ban that Lindsey Graham is putting through, and by the way, he's calling it ban against late-term abortion.
Late-term abortion?
15 weeks.
Our problem with a 15-week ban is, you know, most women are just finding out they're pregnant at around 15 weeks. That is not late-term. Late-term is like 26 weeks, right? Although, if you listen to the Republicans, what they say is those Democrats, they want abortion on demand up until the time of birth and even after, which is just complete.
I love the even after part.
Even yeah. After.
There are laws against infanticide. Okay, we you know, this is called homicide, dude.
Right.
But this is exactly right. I mean, so they're moving goalposts all over the place here, trying to find a sweet spot for their individual candidates to land in so that they can be, you know, well, I agree with Lindsey Graham, there should be a 15-week ban, or I'm with Mitch McConnell, it should be a states' rights issue and everybody should have their own, you know, everybody should be able to choose. That's another one of my favorite things. Well, we're pro-choice. We think states have the right to choose.
Yeah, but you know what? That's not what Lindsey Graham said today. And all you have to do is rewind the tape a month. It was August 7th. Let me play this. This was August 7th, and Miss Lindsey said this.
I've been consistent. I think states should decide the issue of marriage, and states should decide the issue of abortion. I have respect for South Carolina.
South Carolina voters here, I trust, to define marriage and to deal with the issue of abortion, not nine people on the court. That's my view.
How far down should that, I mean, how wide should that go? How many more issues should that go to? For example, Loving versus Virginia, that allowed interracial marriage. That shouldn't be touched.
No, so here's the point. We're talking about things that are not happening because you don't want to talk about inflation. You don't want to talk about crime. This is all politics, my friends.
Really?
Instead of trying to solve problems like unstable people having guns, we're talking about constitutional decisions that are still in effect. But if you're going to ask me to have the federal government take over defining marriage, yeah, I'm going to say no.
Uh-oh. You know, you talk about them wanting to have it both ways. Lindsay wants to have it both ways.
Well, I mean, and I think we talked about this the last time I was on here. We talked about how they're coming for Obergefell. And mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You can hear Lindsey Graham saying it right
there.
Right. It's a states' rights issue. You know, I don't believe that the government should say it. Now, if in fact it comes to the Supreme Court decides to overturn Obergefell, which is only 8 years old.
Yep.
It's not 50 years old. It's only eight, so it's hardly, you know, an ironclad right that at least as far as they're concerned. Then, you know, he can come out and say, well, I think, you know, this should be a national, you know, law that claims that marriage is between a man and a woman. I mean, he'll say that. I mean, there's no consistency. They're shameless.
Gee,
we know that.
You know what? So this is a man.
And, you know, you can see it happening right now. But there is an electoral strategy here that they're trying to deploy because they're really, really worried about this, about the backlash that they've gotten to the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Well,
I mean,
they
the backlash
should be.
Is extreme, and they know it, and this is the best they can do under these circumstances.
And it was self-inflicted. They should be worried because they brought this on themselves, and now they're trying to backtrack, like we heard the politics girl talking, or not, because they, you know, they want to be able to be the answer for everyone's questions, and they just show how deep their hypocrisy goes. It's astounding. And the whole thing just makes no sense, but nothing about them makes sense. And the projection is never ending. It just blows my mind that people still, you know, follow these. I was going to
well,
call them
people.
Well, it
blows my mind even more that people give them the benefit of the doubt, particularly in the media, which I think, you know, I had kind of hoped after the Trump experience that we would see less of a retreat back to their normal behavior, but they are retreating. And you can see it in the way that they report on things like this. You know, you have these people say, you know, well, you know, Lindsey Graham has this idea, and at 15 weeks, they're putting 15 weeks and late-term abortion in their stories as if that makes sense, as if that is a reasonable compromise. They are making that into the middle ground. It is not the middle ground. You know what the middle ground was? Roe versus Wade.
That's right.
Roe versus Wade was not a blanket, you know, right to abortion under any and all circumstances up till birth and
beyond.
It was not. Roe versus Wade had, they broke it down into the three trimesters where the first trimester was, you know, that anyone had a free and clear right to abortion. And then in the second and the third, they allowed states and various other entities to, you know, to have restrictions on it. That was how it would, that was the compromise. That was the compromise.
Right.
And now they're trying to, you know, and they've been doing this for years. And, you know, one of the things, like you said before, you know, what are they, you know, this is all they're doing. It certainly is, because what is amazing to me is that they somehow believed, and this is really clear to me in watching how this unfolded, that, you know, they allowed their zealots to have free reign. I mean, just go for it, say whatever you want about abortion, you know, say it, go ahead, call women murderers, bomb abortion clinics, do what you have to do, because it worked for them politically. They could, all those people were voting for Republicans, right? So they were happy to have it. Never believing, apparently, that all these right-wing freaks they were putting onto the Supreme Court would ever actually overturn it. I don't think they really thought it would be overturned. They were shocked when it actually happened and unprepared for what that would mean. It's clear that they did not, they were caught flat-footed here. And what they thought was, of course, that they were going to do the 15-week ban, or they were going to do something, you know, sort of this carving away at the right instead of actually overturning it. Overturning it came as a total surprise.
Right.
And they literally don't know what to do now, because their people, of course, now they're pushing for a national ban in all cases with no exceptions, right?
Go, I mean, they've got do it. Cuts out. Go. Yeah, bring it on. Because, yes, as someone, Mr. Bird in the chat room just said, the dog caught the car. The dog's not supposed to catch the car. It's
right, and they don't know what to do with it once they, in fact, they're getting dragged down the street by the car.
Yes, they are.
Is what happens. And, you know, it was a very poor strategy, but they're deploying it again in the case of Obergefell and same-sex marriage.
Right.
You can see them doing it kind of now. Oh, well, what do you think should be decided by the states? I mean, they're backtracking, and this was not even on the table.
Right, no.
I'm sure in the evangelical, right-wing evangelical churches and various corners of the wing nutosphere that there have been people talking about this. They don't like gays. We know that. But in the last year, what I've seen, this retreat on acceptance of just gay anything.
Right.
And you know, they're using as I mean, you're seeing the casual homophobia you see now on social media that I haven't seen in years, honestly. I saw a thing the other day about Pete Buttigieg. You know, it was some Republican official in Michigan, where he and Kasten have just moved, saying, you know, something about how, you know, oh, what's this little girl coming up here to do? Something like that? You know, and you're going, whoa. You know, I mean, this kind of just, you know, stuff, you just didn't see that. You know,
yes,
you didn't
but you know what, Digby? It's not only that. This is across the board. Think about it. So they're openly homophobic and bigoted. They're openly racist. I mean, David has a theory that you know, the reason that the Trumpers, the maggots, love Trump so much is he made it acceptable for them to wear their racism on their sleeve, for them to be out in the open with it. They you know, they've made woke a bad word, like that's something to rebel against. We are anti-woke. We are so against woke. We're going to kill woke. And I mean, DeSantis has said shit like that. And yet woke simply means that you're evolved, that you're an open-minded individual who doesn't castigate people on the basis of their identity, right? Anti-Semitism is at almost a century old high, that and it's acceptable. It's okay to say these things out loud. This is why they do this stuff. And one other thing about Lindsey Graham, how interesting that, you know, they put him out to do this. And I'm guessing that it wasn't his choice, that they said, you do it. But this is a man who has never fathered a child. I would say, as far as we know, but I'm pretty certain Lindsey has never fathered a child, and yet he's the authority on what women should do if they get pregnant, and he's never married. He's never gotten married, so he's the authority on who can marry. I mean, it's just this is typical of today's Republican Party. I'm going to tell you what you can do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I thought it was odd, you know, now that you bring it up, that they put Graham out there. Now, he has put forward these national abortion bans before. It was 20 weeks before, but now he's put it back to 15, which is telling as well. I mean, they've really got to keep their freaks on board, right? I mean, and it's getting more and more difficult to do. But picking him is weird, because they've got Marsha Blackburn.
I know.
In the
right?
And she was the one who, when she was in the House, she held those hearings about baby parts. Do you remember that? It was called the Baby Parts Subcommittee or something.
Oh, God.
And
no.
I'm literally using, they use that word in the title of the subcommittee. I mean, she is as hardcore as it gets on this stuff. And I thought, why wasn't she doing this? Or why wasn't she there when he announced this? You know, what's going on? You know, so it's obvious to me, and I don't know who put him out there. I'm assuming that he and Mitch are on the same,
yes,
you know,
they're
on
playing
the same page,
good cop, that, bad cop, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that they did that, but they couldn't get Blackburn or somebody like, I mean, they have women, you know, you'd have a woman do it, right? You'd have a right wing, you know, anti-choice, you know, forced birth woman
yeah,
come
right
out and make this quote, compromise. Instead, they put Lindsey Graham, of all people.
I mean,
what does he know about women?
Nothing. I mean, except, you know, that he wants to be
never
one.
He's married. He doesn't have any kids. I mean, this is the last person.
He's a lifelong bachelor.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You know, so I just, you know, I don't see that seems like a very odd, just the optics of it struck me as very bizarre. But what it says is, and, you know, going back to what we were talking about in the beginning, what it says is that they are throwing everything at the wall and they're doing, you know, and they're kind of running around in circles on this, obviously very, very worried that this issue is going to, you know, blow, it's going to blow back on them so badly that even in places where maybe we don't expect the Democrats to hold on, maybe they will.
Well, look at Kansas.
You know, I think, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, and I don't mean to change the subject, but it sort of flows out of that. You know, there was a big thing in the New York Times yesterday about how the polling is all wrong, or could be wrong, because it was wrong in 2020 and it was wrong in 2018, and it underestimated the
Republican
turnout.
Right.
Republican.
Right. So they're saying again, here's the media who's bending over backwards to appease the right. All you have to do is look at CNN. You turn it on any time of the day and you'll get it. So here they are saying, well, you know, yeah, it's looking much better for the Democrats yet, but maybe not. You know, maybe the polling is wrong again. Just remember what happened the last two times. You get over it.
Yeah, by the way, the Democrats won the last two times.
Yeah,
so, you know, I'm sitting here going, okay, we're supposed to look at the last two elections as big warnings. And I guess, you know, if you're looking historically, that they underperformed the polls, but they won.
Right.
So I'm kind of going, even in places where they, you know, where you wouldn't, places, you know, Pennsylvania, they won in the swing states. You know, they won a whole bunch of them. And so I don't understand why this big panic, but of course we know that this is, you know, this is a way of sort of, I mean, I think it's reflexive. I don't think anybody's consciously doing this at this point. It's been like, I don't know, 30, 40 years of this constant drumbeat from the right that the media is liberal, and now you see what's happening at CNN, and they're firing the Trump critics like John Harwood and Brian Stelzer.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a sense that, oh my gosh, we really went too far and we better tack back. And so you see this kind of thing, and I think it's reflexive of their fear that they're going to be tagged as liberal media. And so you see these kind of things, and it's, you know, it's depressing. And it's, and, you know, I hopefully most normal voters aren't paying any attention to this kind of thing. This is a social media phenomenon and for elite people who read the New York Times. But nonetheless, it's depressing because, you know, look, it's possible that the Democrats are actually underperforming the polls. That's possible.
It's possible.
It has happened in the past. But they don't have any idea, you know, they're not factoring in other things. Like, how about this massive new registration of
women,
younger people, particularly younger women, all over the country? Are they polling those young people? I doubt it.
I doubt it.
They're all on cell phones. I don't think they're asking them what they're going to do. And I think it's highly unlikely they're voting for Republicans. So, you know, I mean, obviously, we have to wait and see, but I'm actually much more interested in that data than I am in what these pollsters and their polling averages are saying, because polling is at the moment kind of in flux, and it's, you know, you look at it and, you know, you get sort of a general idea. But this other side of it, where you're seeing all these new registrations, you're seeing the special elections that went the Democrats' way, you're seeing things like what happened up in Alaska, which was totally unexpected. And you're sort of going, hey, you know, maybe that balances it out, even if you assume that the polling error exists, that there's something else going on that's probably not being polled at all. So let's all just, you know, cool our jets here and just, you know, keep your head down, do the work, go out and, you know, register people to vote, make sure you get the word out, and stop with the fear-mongering about, you know, this sort of thing. It's like you just see it all the time. Well, the Republicans have it in the bag. They we're screwed.
We were told that for the last 2 years.
They got the courts, and, you know, there's nothing we can do, and blah, blah, blah. And I just get sick of hearing it, because it's, you know, it's actually not true. By the way, just a reminder, we won the last two elections. So, you know, STFU, you know?
We did. Digby is with us. You know, you mentioned the New York Times, And so I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up this story. Maggie Haberman has a book coming out in which it's the release date is still almost, 3 weeks away, October 4th. And in it, she tells that Donald Trump was very open with staffers saying that he is not leaving the White House, that if he loses or when he realized he lost, that he's not going anywhere. Did she really sit on that for almost 2 years?
Well, I don't know when she got that information. I mean, if you want to give her the benefit of the doubt, you can say that she just heard it.
Right.
It's possible. But, this is these book authors have had a few nuggets like that they held back. I mean, we've seen that.
Yep.
And I don't know if it would have made any difference or not, but they're all employed by newspapers and other publications. And if I were a newspaper, I'd be pissed off that my star reporters here were holding stuff back for their book. That's what they're paid to tell the news, when they hear it, when they get it.
Now,
not to hold on to it for their own, personal profit. So, I don't know. We heard a lot of things during that period about Trump. And let's just put it this way. Are we shocked that he said he wasn't going to leave? Because
no,
I'm not.
No,
I'm frankly shocked that he did.
So am I. But to hear that he told staffers those exact words and not to hear about it until 678 days after the election that he lost is, and the reason I know that, I didn't just pull that number out of thin air. I am not a Steve Schmidt fan, but Steve Schmidt went on a tear yesterday on Twitter. Did you see this?
I saw it, yeah.
Let me share a little bit of it for the listeners who maybe didn't see it. Steve Schmidt, again, he's the guy who ran John McCain's campaign, he and Nicole Wallace, and gave us Sarah Palin. That's who Steve Schmidt is. Well, now, of course, he's seen the light. He knows Trump is evil. He's one of the principals behind the Lincoln Project. And again, Steve Schmidt, I cannot forgive him, Sarah Palin. Anyway, he's trying to make amends. He's trying to right the wrongs that he's done to our nation. So listen, he had this Twitter thread yesterday, and here's how it started. There is a profound crisis in American media because there has been a collapse of trust between news organizations and the public. Below is a staggering example. Let's go through it. And then he says 678 days have passed since the 2020 election that Trump lost. CNN just reported as breaking news the tidbit below from a book it obtained. In fact, the book was not breaking news, but the work of a paid contributor who withheld the news along with her employer, the New York Times, from the American people for almost 2 years. The breaking news isn't news. It's corporate PR and marketing and coordinating with the news division. Together, they are abusing a breaking news banner that the new leadership of CNN would said would no longer be abused, like the News of the World does the supermarket checkout line. The book was a transaction between publicists, not a newsworthy revelation. The reporter, Maggie Haberman, suppressed important information from the public so she can make money with her side hustle. And then he goes on, the New York Times permitted her to do this. The CNN marketing department has sought to help her with book sales by stoking an imagined conflict between Haberman and Trump. And then it goes on and on. Haberman doesn't report on Trump so much as broker information between the institutions, the New York Times, Trump, and CNN for her benefit and their self-interest. Biz model, not the reader / subscriber's elucidation. And it goes on like that. Oh, my God. Oh, let me read the next one because he calls out Kellyanne Conway. He says, ethically, it's in the same ballpark as Kellyanne Conway and the Hatch Act, stock trades for members of Congress, and White House staffers who made hundreds of millions from their service. Was it important information for the public to know Trump said he wasn't leaving after losing an election? Yes. Was this information deliberately concealed for an economic reason that took higher precedence than the truth and the public right to know? Yes. Is that ethical conduct by the New York Times? No. Does this conduct meet CNN's stated standards? No. Is below why trust in the media has collapsed and the truth and lie stand equal in the public square? Yes. And the thing below is a story from CNN that says, breaking news, former President guy, repeatedly told aides in the days following his 2020 election loss that he would remain in the White House rather than let incoming President Joe Biden take over, according to reporting provided to CNN from a forthcoming book by the New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman. "I'm just not going to leave," Trump told one aide, according to Haberman. "We're never leaving," Trump told another. How can you leave when you won an election? Oh, my God. So good on Steve Schmidt. I mean, he's not holding back. I think he's, you know, kind of damaged goods. But then again, Nicole Wallace has a 2-hour show on MSNBC. So, you know, what does that tell you?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, when he's right, he's right.
When he's right, he's right. And her, too. In fact, she's one of the more credible voices over there, which says a lot of the state of our media today and the so-called liberal media on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, I mean, about the critique on Haberman, I mean, I think it's fair enough since she was known as, you know, what was her nickname? The Trump Whisperer,
yes,
I think.
Right.
And, you know, that this was the kind of thing at the time that perhaps coming from her, if she got this at the time, if she was hearing this while it was happening and she held it back, it, you know, it could have made a difference being from her because people assumed that she did have you know, contacts within the White House that were excellent. There were, I don't know who these people were that were talking to her, but she wasn't making it up. I mean, as because a lot of what she had written has come true, or been the evidence has been shown, or it's been validated by through other means, including the January 6th committee. So it might have made a difference if people heard that, if people heard that he was saying he wasn't going to leave.
Right.
Not that anyone would be surprised by it necessarily. But when you look at the evidence that's being collected about what they were planning to do to keep from him leaving, from, you know, I mean, the picture you get from those quotes are that he's just going to dig in his heels, they're going to have to, you know, I don't know, send in the National Guard to drag him out by his feet or whatever. But that may not be what he meant. I mean, what he meant was, and we know for a fact now from the evidence from the January 6th committee, is that he had plans to overturn the election. He staged a coup. I mean, it ultimately failed, but he was going to stay in the White House. I mean, this,
right,
this much is true. So these are the kinds of things that, you know, I don't think at the time people knew, and a lot of it, the information has come out subsequent. But nonetheless, there was a lot of stuff going on at the time that you could see with your own eyes. I'm sure you talked about it. I know,
oh, yes,
I wrote about it.
Oh, yes.
That this guy not planning to leave because, you know, look, he's playing, look at the, what, you know, they had all the lawsuits, they had the, you know, I mean, look what happened on January 6th. You
I
had
know.
All these dozens of you know, congressional representatives and senators standing up and saying that they objected to the count. That actually happened even after the insurrection. They came back, and how many was it, 130 Republicans still objected to the election after that in the House? I mean, it was a huge number that they stood by that. So, you know, there were plans afoot, and we knew that. So, yeah, I mean, holding back on that, if she knew about it at the time, these were the kind of details that were important for people to understand and to hear and to know. And it's not, you know, this whole idea, you know, well, old Trump, you know, he's just kind of a kook, and he just says stuff, and they don't. It doesn't really mean much. Well, we know for a fact it did mean something. When he said he wasn't going to leave, he meant that he wasn't going to leave,
yeah,
and that he was going to overturn the election and he was going to stay president. That was his plan. He was plotting to do that.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, I mean, this is it's still crazy. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, the January 6th committee, I'm sure, will have something to say about that, too.
Right.
You know, that says here he was telling people, you know,
so
I'm
then,
not leaving.
So then when he did leave, he decided to take a whole slew of classified documents and other documents that belong to the office, not to him. But he doesn't understand the line between the person and the office that they hold. He just doesn't get
he
it.
He never has. I mean,
he never has.
For him, it's l'état, c'est moi, right? I am the state. I mean, everything. He said this. And there, even the other day, and I heard this, I couldn't believe they trotted this out. He had, you remember he said throughout for years, you know, there, I have an Article 2, and an Article 2 says I can do anything I want. That's Article 2 of the Constitution. It's not true. He didn't have the, you know, that is not what it says. But he believed this, that, and he was told this. I don't, you know, I'd love to know who specifically told him that he had, you know, unlimited power to do anything he wanted. But they did tell him that. And he believed it. And I heard in one of the filings, maybe it was the last one where they were putting, you know, where his lawyers were nominating the judges. I can't remember if it was that one or the one before. They actually brought up Article 2, and I'm going, oh, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, are they actually going to pull this out and say, not only does a president have unlimited powers to do anything he wants, so does a former president have unlimited powers to do anything he wants. Wow. Yeah. I mean, Richard Nixon's rolling over in his grave by now going, damn, if only I'd known.
Well, when the president does it, that means it is not illegal.
And when a former president does it, it's not illegal. You know, I mean, this is insane. I mean, it's literally insane. But this is where we're at, and we're watching this lawsuit unfold down in Mar-a-Lago. It's not a lawsuit. This criminal investigation unfolding over the absconding of all those documents and the stealing of highly classified documents. That's unbelievable.
Right.
And then this week we find out that, you know, they just issued 40 subpoenas. Very high-level Trump people around, it appears, and we don't really know for sure specifically what the whole parameters of this investigation are, or if it's the same investigation or two overlapping investigations or what, but one has to do with the fake electors, which is a real thing. I mean, that is part of the coup for sure.
Yes.
And then the other is this super PAC that they put together afterwards to, you know, to fight the...
Right.
To do the Stop the Steal, and that one looks like a slush fund to end all slush funds, because there was like $250 million in that thing. And they're looking at where'd that money go. It sure didn't go to, quote, stopping the steal. It went to all kinds of things, including what appears to be maybe paying some of these people who were involved in the fake elector scheme. So when I read this whole thing, it's very confusing and nobody really knows. It reminded me of the early news articles by Woodward and Bernstein about Watergate, where you're reading this thing and you're going, what the hell is going on here? You know, what does this mean? What's going on? Because they were just getting piecemeal bits of information. Also from people who were coming out of the grand jury and various leaks and, you know, different people like Deep Throat and whatever. But that's what I thought of, and I thought, wow, this is the follow the money investigation.
Uh-huh.
This is very, very interesting, because the tentacles of that and where that money may be going, whether, you know, you've got Roger Stone involved in this, you've got all kinds of things in this. So keep your eye on that one, because that had all the hallmarks to me of one of those very, very, you know, slush fund, you know, money laundering kind of investigations that end up, and you know, I know, far be it from me to suggest that Donald Trump would ever be involved in such a thing, because, you know, he's honest as the day is long. But that seems, you know, to me like maybe that it's so Donald Trump that it's like it is quintessential.
Yes.
Trump.
Well,
lift.
And more quintessential Trump. So there was a bit of intrigue yesterday, Digby, that eagle-eyed reporter, I guess, noticed that Trump flew into the D.C. area. And they're thinking, oh, what is this about? Maybe he's going to turn himself in. Oh, come on. We're talking about the former guy here. And then there are photos of him on the golf course holding court with a bunch of other white men wearing their golf outfits, but nobody was swinging a club. It appeared to be they were like having a meeting on the golf course. Do you have any idea what that was all about?
Well, when I saw that, my first thought was, you know, it looks like a meeting of the five families, right? You know, it's the kind of thing that you would do. I think Trump has had plenty of meetings on the golf course. You know, I mean, he's been seen there, you know, plenty of his allies and various people in Congress and what have you. He'll be in there. I have no idea what that was. And, you know, he was there with Eric, which is the one identifiable person that I saw in the pictures. Which means it might have been a golf thing. You know, it might have been a business thing. You know, the golf course is being run badly, so we had a bunch of his people there, and they had to meet up on how to, you know, I don't know, trim the lawns better or something. I don't know.
I don't think
I have
so.
No I have no idea what it was, but it's fascinating that this is where we're at with Donald Trump, that people are following him around. And I mean, there was a video on social media of him in a golf cart riding around in that in the golf course without any clubs, so he wasn't golf.
He wasn't playing golf.
And it went on for like 15 minutes. I'm going, is something going to happen here? Or, you know, what had, did he fall out of the golf cart? Or did he, you know, did we suddenly see him meeting up with Roger Stone and
I don't know.
Paul Manafort and Stephen Miller or something in the middle of the course? But no, it was just him riding around on this golf course. So, you know, I think we're all getting a little, you know, I mean,
we're looking for something here.
Wait and see. Here, I wonder.
So his meeting on the golf course was yesterday, and today, Ken Starr died.
Like a meeting of the five families.
Yeah.
You know, was anything getting baptized yesterday?
And of course, there's the Queen, and he's all, you know, he's, you wrote a great piece about poor Donald thinks that he had such a great relationship with old Elizabeth, and he wasn't invited to her funeral.
Oh my God, I mean, he has been, I don't know, probably nobody with any sense follows Truth Social. I do because it's my job, so I have to go over there and follow what he writes and what he says, and I'm not kidding, for days. One thing after another about the Queen and going on and on about how great friends they were and how much she loved him and how they really got along. And it was his greatest honor in his whole life, and picture after picture after picture of him and that horrifyingly embarrassing state visit
horrible.
They made with
just
the whole
horrible.
Family. Do you remember the vampires up in the window at
yes.
Buckingham Palace, Kushner and Ivanka? And you know, I mean, it was just, it was such a humiliating display. They were so awful, you know, and as I said in my piece, it's like the Clampets came to town, right? I mean, it was just awful.
It was. I mean, and then I watched the video of them up on the balcony, and all I could picture was, you know, Ellie Mae and Jed what's his name?
Granny and what was Buddy? Was that? I can't
no,
remember.
No, I'm losing it on his name too. Max somebody. Jethro. Jethro. Jethro Bodine.
Of course, Jethro and Ellie Mae. Yeah,
Ellie
of
Mae.
Course. That's exactly, you know, and Steve Mnuchin's over there, you know, with his phone taking video. I mean, the whole thing, it's just a humiliating moment for the United States. You know, these state visits, you don't bring your whole adult family.
No, yes.
Including spouses. No,
well,
it's not.
But he also brought Ivanka to, you know, the G8 and to, you know, to
dinner to meetings. I mean,
yes. You know. And had her sitting at his seat. And like, what the fuck? Are we some kind of a kingdom? Oh, now I see
yes.
where he's going and why he loves the Queen so much.
Oh, he loves the Queen. He loves the royal family, you know, his mother. And I put it in my piece, you know, there was an interesting, his mother apparently was, you know, she was a Scottish born immigrant.
Oh, right.
That he's the child of an immigrant, but, you know, whatever. I guess it's okay, since she was a Brit. She wasn't from one of the shithole countries. That
right.
He, you know.
Yep.
But in any case, he used to, you know, his mother used to love to, she watched the coronation of Queen Elizabeth, and he sat at her feet and watched the coronation with her. So he has this great bond with the Queen and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, part of it is that he thinks that, you know, she has German blood. Of course, you know, the Windsors are actually, I mean,
yeah,
they
Germans.
Were Germans.
Yeah.
Until World War One, they were pretty German.
Yeah.
And he thinks he has, quote, German blood, and he's very, very proud of his German genes.
Yes,
and
well, we know that.
He really believes that maybe on some level he's related.
Yeah.
That he and the Queen are related, and that basically, and that my editor changed this line, and I was kind of sad because I thought it was funny. Was that I said that he thinks that he's the son that Queen never had. It was funny, but she changed it, and maybe, you know, he thinks that he should be the Queen's
right,
stepson. Or
right, right. Oh, fine, and Diane in the chat room noted, and she secretly knighted him, too, we heard.
Right.
Right?
I have heard that rumor. And now, today we find out that, you know, I think Bush and Clinton and of course,
Obama.
Biden's going.
Right, Biden's going.
And I think
going.
That Bush and Obama, not Clinton, oh. Bush and Obama have been invited to the funeral,
oh.
or I read that.
Quietly, though, because publicly only Biden was invited.
I know, and I don't know if this is true or not. I can't remember. I read it on the Daily Beast or someplace like that, where, you know, but Trump most certainly was not invited. And, you know, I'm sure he's stung because, of course, he was, according to him, and by the way, all the right-wingers on Newsmax and on Fox and all over social media, you know, oh, the Queen loved Trump more than any other U.S. president.
Well, like, this...
He almost tripped her when they were reviewing the troops, he practically.
Well, and he kept walking in front of her, which you do not do. He didn't observe any of the traditions of the, you know, the pomp and circumstance.
The protocol.
The protocol.
Well,
thank you.
I mean,
you.
Even if, okay, let's say you're an American, if you're an American who says, damn, who cares about this stupid royalty thing? Even if you were, which he isn't, because he loves royalty.
Right.
But, you know, even if you don't care about protocol, just do you do that to any elderly woman?
Right.
just kind of practically knock her over and walk in front of her and try and trip her up. I mean, she was in her 90s.
Yes.
You know, I mean, to me, you take care and make sure that the elderly woman is not being, or elderly man for that matter. I mean, anybody in their 90s. And there he was, just kind of marching in front of her and basically knocking her. And he kept putting his hands on her, too.
It's yes,
also
he did.
Cool.
Right. Yes.
Patting her on the back and putting his arm around her. It's like everybody's just cringing, going, oh, my God.
Right.
No. Don't touch this, you know, Her Royal Majesty. We don't do that. And, you know, of course, you know, Americans are, you know, sort of back patting, you know, bullion sort of people that way. But, you know, still, she's an older woman and she is the Queen of England. And you can afford to just be a little bit more mannerly than that. And they all acted like, I mean, I thought they acted like complete bumpkins when they were over there.
Yes.
And they, you know,
well, they did.
In the stupid hats and
but,
they had
and
ill-fitting.
They are.
Oh, God.
That's who they are. There's no class there. These are the most uncouth, you know, just new money kind of people. You know, I'm talking this old money, I'm the class person. No, it's they don't understand protocol. And it was apparent during all the years in the White House as well. They just don't have any respect for the norms of a nation, of a government, of a institution. Right? Nothing.
They don't have any respect.
None. Whoops.
Stop. I mean, they just don't respect anything.
Nothing.
And don't respect other people. And just, you know, they behave like barbarians. And, you know, they're very, very wealthy. And I think that, you know, they just feel like they're entitled. I mean, they're like, you know, there are a lot of sort of second and third generation super rich people.
Yeah.
Ugh. Who are like, you know, they're just not, they're real, and they're, you know, they're assholes, let's just face it, you know, and that's what they are. And they represented America in, you know, just really the most, well, all I can say is embarrassing. That's the only word I can come up with. I mean, being ashamed of America's leadership around the world.
Feeling
and of course,
like you have to apologize to the rest of the world for this guy and saying he doesn't represent us.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure Biden did that on the QT. I mean, I don't think he said it publicly, but I'm sure when he met with everybody, kind of going, hey, guys, sorry.
Yep.
You know, I apologize for everything that happened. He, you know, I mean, remember, it wasn't just, you know, he dissed every British politician, too. Remember, he went over there and said, yeah, I told Theresa May what she needed to do about Brexit, and she didn't listen to me and didn't do it right. He called the mayor of London a stone cold loser.
I know.
While he was there.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, that's the kind of thing that he would do. He would go anywhere in the world and just basically just insult the hell out of everybody in the country. I mean, who does that? What kind of people are they? Well, they're Clampets. That's what
they are.
That's what
they are, the Clampets.
Clampets were actually nice people. They were just a little, you know, they just didn't know what they were doing. The Trumps are actually nasty.
Evil. They are. They're horrible, nasty, evil people. By the way, Digby, I'd be remiss if I got through the hour and didn't comment on a piece that you put up on your blog this afternoon, shortly before we went on the air. And I'm, of course, sensitive to when you write, I feel sorry for the normal people down there, in a post called More Florida Crazy.
Just talking about you. too, Nicole.
I figured that. And it gets more and more difficult each day. He's got death sentence, I'm talking about, has ads running. You know, he's just swimming in money, which really sucks.
I know.
And so now he's on TV. And these ads are like, they're fawning. They're people, obviously paid actors, going, thank you, Governor DeSantis. You kept our schools open. You let us keep working. You gave us money to do this. And it's like, oh my God, this is just so nauseating. And every day there's another travesty in his name. Well, today the story on the front page of the Miami Herald is, the headline is, DeSantis, full armor of God rhetoric, reaches Republicans, but is he playing with fire? He's embracing this Christian nationalist crap.
Yep.
And, you know, bringing it into the schools. This is a religion. You know, we don't have separation of church and state. He has refashioned the civics curriculum of our public schools to the point where teachers are going, I don't recognize what country we're in.
Right. And in Miami-Dade, I don't know what the deal is with that school board.
Now,
but what in the world is happening? I mean, that's a huge school district, right? I mean,
yes.
It's got to be giant. And the stuff, they are just intruding every single day on something in there and, you know, removing curriculum, doing this. I mean, it's scary, actually, because DeSantis, after Trump, really, DeSantis is, for the moment, I mean, we'll see, the front runner for the leadership of the Republican Party nationally. So, you know, you got to pay attention, and I do. I mean, I keep my eye on him very, very closely. And what he's doing down there, and I think we've talked about this before, I mean, he is the guy who is most closely following the Viktor Orban model.
Yeah.
Which is different than Trump. I mean, Trump is sort of a precursor, but with Trump, everything's personal, right? I mean, it's all about some individual that he goes after and insults. You know, it's like what we were talking about. He just has this, and people like that. It's very entertaining to them to watch him be, you know, just a total jerk and insult people all the time. They like it. You know, Crooked Hillary and the stupid nicknames and all that stuff. That's different than DeSantis. DeSantis is actually operationalizing the levers of government to do those very things, but on a much more sort of global scale within the state of Florida for the moment, but it could be national if he becomes a national candidate, a national leader. And he's actually, you know, doing this stuff, and he's just trying to get elected. I'm going, he doesn't need to do that to get elected in Florida. He really doesn't. He's pretty popular. He could pull this off without going this far. What he's staging is an experiment, I think, in Orban-esque governing. And by you know, even pushing, like the thing where they went and arrested those 20 people for alleged voter fraud, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's a disgusting thing that they did. Those people were told that they could vote. They were allowed to vote. They were given the registration. And the law itself says that, you know, that it was the responsibility of the state to monitor this, right? And they didn't do it. In fact, one of the main people that are in his, you know, whatever the election police force that he has, was one of the people who were in charge of doing that. And he failed in his job. This whole thing may be thrown out in court, but that's not really the point. What DeSantis is, I think, doing, I think he's trying out all these things. He's, you know, the great, what do they call the laboratories of democracy, they call the states. Well, this is what we're seeing when you've got a mad scientist doing experiments in one of our laboratories, and it's a big one in Florida, which is a great microcosm of the whole country, really, because there are a lot of Democrats down there, too. It's a big state with a diverse population. And what he's doing is really scary. I mean, this thing that, you know, he is using the levers of government and his bully pulpit to challenge every other institution and seeing how far he can go with it. And, you know, he went after Disney.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that takes some cojones,
yes,
right?
Yes, it does. And it's stupid. Disney is the biggest employer in the state. Well, actually, Publix might be, but Disney is close. To what end? I don't understand. It's going to wind up costing the taxpayer millions of dollars.
Oh, absolutely. And money is no object here.
No.
I mean, money's no object. He's trying to see if he can, you know, cow the press, if he can find ways. This is what Orbán did in Hungary. And, you know, what he did, for one of the main things he did was go after the educational institutions from the higher education all the way down and basically turn them into instruments of his ideology.
Right.
He did that there. I mean, he went after the media and found ways and going through some very interesting things. I haven't seen, DeSantis doesn't have the power to do this yet, but I'm sure he will try, which is to go after them through their corporate ownership. And maybe we're seeing a little bit of that starting to happen, what we're seeing over at CNN,
yes,
which is truly astonishing how quickly that's happening. Or, you know, I mean, what's the other, there's another outlet that's kind of doing the same thing where you're seeing a turn to the right. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
All of them. New York Times, Washington Post.
Well, I know what it was. It was Politico.
With a new owner.
By a German,
yes,
fellow, you know, sort of a Peter Thiel type libertarian who was pretty much basically a Donald Trump supporter.
Right, but Politico was always sort of a right-wing leaning rag anyway. This is just going to make them more so.
It's going to be even more so. So,
yeah,
you say, I mean, it's more overt, I guess, is,
yeah,
what we're seeing.
Right.
That we're going to see, you know, you've got people like John Malone at CNN basically saying, I wanted CNN to do this, turn more, quote, centrist, which, of course, in his view, is what we would have called far right maybe 5 years ago.
That's right.
Is now centrist, right? So, you know, we're seeing a lot of this stuff sort of happen, this sort of experimentation with Orbanism. And I, you know, DeSantis to me is the scariest guy. And, of course, the outcome, the results of what he's doing, one of the big headlines today was that Florida has overtaken New York in COVID deaths.
Yes, it has. Hello. Yay. We're number one. Hey.
We're number one. Damn it.
So thrilled. I mean, to me, that's so disgusting. I can't even believe that would happen. I mean, Florida has, you know,
but they do.
Population.
You're
and
right.
And New York was, of course, the main reason it had as high as it did was because the virus hit there first in massive numbers.
Right.
But here's Florida just ticking up, just one month after another.
But DeSantis,
all those old people.
Exactly. You know, but DeSantis employs the Donald Trump method of truth denial by lying. And he says, oh, our COVID response was the best. In fact, in these stupid commercials with these actors, you know, singing his praises. Oh, we went back to school. We went to work. We didn't shut down. Meanwhile, you know, you have death sentence blaming this administration on the shutdowns. And I've got video of him talking about a shutdown in Florida. He's the one who ordered it. It didn't come from the government. And so everything about him is just a lie. And by the way, since we're in overtime anyway, I've pulled this clip of Viktor Orban speaking at CPAC. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that this conservative, so-called conservative Republican conference, not only held a special CPAC gathering in Orban's Hungary, but then they invited him here to spread his fascism in America. And this is just less than a minute of Orban at CPAC in Texas.
Hungary shall protect the institution of marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Family ties shall be based on marriage or the relationship between parents and children. To sum up, the mother is a woman, the father is a man, and leave our kids alone. Full stop, end of discussion.
Oh my God. Full stop, end of discussion. And there's a standing ovation.
Yep.
That.
Oh, I mean, they love him. And he is, you know, he is the model. Obviously, every country has its own, you know, way of doing things, and the laws govern things differently here. But yeah, that's the model.
Yeah.
That if there, to the extent that there's an intellectual underpinning to anything on the right, and it's not that much of an underpinning, but it exists. And people like Leonard Leo, the guy who ushered in our, you know, horrendous Supreme Court majority,
yep,
is out there with $1 billion now pushing this stuff, and he's one of those guys. And there are plenty of others, and you see CPAC there, you know, which is, you know, it's influential. Tucker Carlson, you know, one of the most influential voices in America, which is shocking and sickening.
It really is. I mean, do you remember when he used to be on MSNBC with his nerdy bow tie and his whiny voice and nobody watched him?
Oh my God, we laughed at him.
Yes.
I mean, he was kind of a joke. Well, the joke's on us.
Really?
He's very popular, and he's very iconoclastic, and he does his own thing. And he's the one. He took his show to Hungary twice, and is a huge fan of Orbán, and is one of the people pushing this stuff.
Ugh.
And you know, this is where, and I think DeSantis is following that line very closely, and he's not the only one. There are others. This sort of you know, white, you know, Christian nationalist movement,
yeah,
which is way beyond populism. It kind of calls itself populist, but
yeah, it isn't
way,
right,
way beyond that. It's fascist, or if you want to be more precise, semi-fascist. it's out there, and that's what we're dealing with, and that is what's on the horizon with these people. And you know, I don't think it's a majority of people. Much, I don't even think it's a majority of the Republican Party. I think a lot of Trumpism, at least a fair amount of it, is Trump himself, because, like I said, he, that entertaining side of him, where, you know, the rally guy, who out there is out there saying, you know, crooked Hillary, and being, you know, they're screaming lock her up and doing their chants and wearing their stupid costumes and all that stuff. That's like the cult following thing. That's the cult of personality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much that transfers onto somebody like DeSantis or one of the other ones that are coming up. But it doesn't really matter, because at some point the Republicans are going to have to, you know, move beyond Trump. And there's nothing else now. There's nothing else but DeSantis. He said there is no other road. I mean, you have people like, you know, Hogan from Maryland, or, you know, some guy like Sununu from New Hampshire, right? And they could go on TV and say, oh, you know, we're against Trumpism and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they have nothing in the party.
Right. It's like John Kasich.
You know,
it's like John Kasich.
But you're nothing.
Right. Or John Kasich in the last election. Nice of you to be there, but shut up already. Go home.
Well, you're meaningless. You know,
yeah.
I mean, go ahead and you know, say what you want, but don't think that there's any constituency for this, because it really isn't. Now, I don't know if these other Republicans have, you know, are ready to adopt DeSantis. I mean, he doesn't have, like I said, just as an entertainment.
Right, but he didn't have a TV show for 10 years to string these people along so that they love him. Right.
Right, exactly. It's a whole different thing. It's just that part of it is different. It's an interesting contrast between Trump and Trumpism / Orbanism that you're seeing happening in the next generation of Republican leaders.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's a kind of interesting that I'd prefer not to have to deal with.
Oh my God, no. And it's bad either way, you know? I mean, it's like there's no good there.
No.
I mean, like, you know, you're like, oh, Trump or Trumpism / Orban, Trump,
yeah,
or DeSantis. I'm going, oh, please,
God,
you know.
Right.
Yeah, and that's you know, disgusting. I don't even want to
talk about
either.
There is no lesser of those two evils. They're both,
no,
you know,
they're equal evil.
Digby, we could keep going, but we're already in overtime. Thank you so much. I love talking to you. We could just go on and on and on. One of these days, hopefully, we can do it in person again. As I head back further
west. Yes, I would love to.
You and me both.
All right. Well, you take care, Nicole. Thanks
you
for
too.
Having me.
Thank you, Digby. You take care. Bye-bye. Find Digby, of course, at digbysblog.net. That's where you find Digby's Hullabaloo, one of the OG progressive blogs on the web. And, of course, she also writes for Salon.com. And with that, we are done. Yeah, that's it for today. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Tom Hartman. Yes, Tom Hartman will be here live. And for those asking, yeah, in the chat room, I know I jumped into the chat room for a couple of quick hits, but that was live. We didn't record that earlier. Tomorrow, Tom Hartman will be here live for the second half hour of the show. So you have any questions, bring them on. We're going to talk about his latest book about neoliberalism. So it's a class. We'll be in session with Professor Tom Hartman tomorrow. All right. With that, I will leave you with the news. And I should have said something about the Emmys last night, which just were totally weird. it was just weird. It was like no Emmy award show I've ever seen, but I guess now I'm officially old and no longer in the demo. Okay. Fine. All right. Be that way. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Here's the news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Justice Department on Monday night agreed to accept one of the former guy's two proposed candidates for special master to review the documents seized in the search of Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. If the judge, Eileen Cannon, selects the candidate, former New York federal judge Raymond Deary, as special master, the review could begin soon. Now, the DOJ is trying to work it out to move the investigation along, but Trump's lawyers are trying to slow walk the whole process. They asked the judge to deny the Justice Department's request to restore FBI access to the classified material. The judge is expected to rule anytime now. Meanwhile, in a separate investigation into Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election results, the Justice Department issued 40 subpoenas last week to one-time aides of the former president. And in addition to the subpoenas, they seized the phones of at least two top-ranking Trump advisors, Boris Epstein, an in-house counsel involved in coordinating his legal efforts, and Mike Roman, who was Trump campaign's Election Day operations director. So to everyone who was critical of Merrick Garland for taking too long, it looks like it's all falling into place now. Stay tuned. White House officials have also been closely watching freight rail labor negotiations as the first national railroad strike in 30 years could start as soon as this Friday. About 60,000 union members who work for the railroad are ready to strike, including the engineers and conductors who make up the two-person crews on each train. If the strike happens, it would bring the freight rail system, which carries nearly 30% of our freight, to a halt. As a result, Amtrak announced Monday that it will preemptively suspend service on some of its long-range routes. Separately, about 15,000 nurses in Minnesota went on strike on Monday in what the union called the largest private sector nurses strike in U.S. history. Well, this seems to be a new unwelcome trend, as controversy swirls over a top D.C. reporter allegedly holding onto a blockbuster story for her forthcoming book instead of publishing it as breaking news at the New York Times where she works. But Maggie Haberman has apparently done just that. In her forthcoming book, Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America, which is due out October 4th, she reveals that after Trump started questioning the legitimacy of the election results, he told close aides that he would never leave the White House. The response on the Twitters on Monday was overwhelming, including a massive screed from Steve Schmidt of the Lincoln Project. So far, no response from the Times or Haberman. Surprising, though very welcome news out of Ukraine, where Ukrainian troops have retaken nearly all of the northeast region from Russian forces who've occupied that land for months. Meanwhile, deputies from 18 municipal districts in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and other cities in Russia have called for President Vladimir Putin's resignation. The petition and list of signatures was shared on Monday on Twitter and says in part, quote, "We, the municipal deputies of Russia, believe that the actions of its president, Vladimir Putin, are detrimental to Russia's and its citizens' future." Twitter whistleblower Peter Mudge-Zatko is testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. It's his first public appearance since making bombshell allegations against the social media company last month that Twitter has undisclosed security and privacy vulnerabilities that he says could threaten users, investors, and even U.S. national security. There's the possibility that today's testimony could lay the groundwork for deeper probes by Congress, federal regulators, and law enforcement officials, and warnings that it could further complicate the legal battle over Twitter's agreement to be acquired by Elon Musk. And it comes on the same day that Twitter shareholders are scheduled to vote on that deal, which I didn't think was still in effect. And finally, Tuesday, September 13th, is the last primary election contest of the season. Voters go to the polls today in Delaware, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire. Then it's all eyes on November 8th as Republicans try to gain control of the House and the Senate. But three new members of Congress are being sworn in this evening, the winners of special elections. Speaker Nancy Pelosi will swear in Congresswoman-elect Mary Peltola of Alaska, Pat Ryan of New York, and Joe Sempolinski of New York. After they're sworn in, there will be 221 Democrats and 212 Republicans, along with two vacancies remaining in the House, giving Pelosi a four-vote cushion for the onslaught of legislation that they hope to pass between now and the end of the year. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.